gonna say goodbye.
Two 2:30 to 4 Monday to Friday. It is the Blitz. Mitch Widmeyer here with you on AM 1450 KATE. Going to the phone lines, our guest this afternoon. He joins us every week. His name, Arif Hassan, covers the Vikings for Zone Coverage and the Daily Norseman. Find much of his work through those two outlets, zonecoverage.com. Click on the Vikings tab at the top of the page. Arif, as always, it's a pleasure. The time is appreciated. Vikings training camp well underway, as are the other 31 training camps throughout the National Football League. Yesterday, at the Vikings training camp during their practice, there was a little scrum between Laquon Treadwell and Anton Exum. Where does that rank in ones that you've seen at training camps in years past?
The Vikings training camps have typically not had very, very violent scrums, so it's not like a long list to compare them against. But, you know, this time punches were thrown, so, you know, I'd say it's actually up there over the past several years. It's not as big as the time Treadwell body slammed Jabari Price. I don't know if that's fair, though. I think the fight started that way. I don't know that Price was a known participant until after the body slam. But this time, but Treadwell again and Exum seem to be both ready and willing to throw down. This seemed like a thing that they had, I'm not going to say organized, but they had essentially both kind of understood was going to happen. No one was very upset that the fight happened. A lot of punches were missed. I don't think they're very trained or accomplished fighters. We're not going to see them on UFC anytime soon. But, you know, the coaches didn't seem too upset.
Were they throwing a lot of these punches while both were wearing their helmets? Because that's always like a, a huge issue with it, but it's odd when they're both wearing helmets to be throwing punches at a helmet instead of a face.
Yeah, they were both wearing helmets. I actually noted that in my tweet because how can you, like, that's so ridiculous.
No doubt. Who is the one dude, you know, I have to ask this question now as a follow-up. Who is the one dude on the Vikings, the last guy on the team that you yourself would want to be in a 1v1 scrum with?
That I would want to be?
Yeah, like the last guy you'd, if you were in a one-on-one scrum,
right,
who's the last guy on the Vikings you would want to see featured against you? Like the most intimidating guy on the Vikings team to be in a 1v1 fight with?
It might be Alec Boone, not because he's the meanest or anything like that, but he's the meanest out of all of the very big people. Like, I think I'm going to have to, like, account for, you know, the size weight, massive size weight disadvantages I'd have against them versus someone like Marcus Sherrill, who I'm sure is pound for pound scrappier, right? So, yeah, I'm going to go with Alec Boone for now, even though I think typically defensive linemen are a little bit scarier.
On the flip side of that, then, we don't want to throw any shade at anyone, throw anyone under the bus, but if you got to choose your opponent, but your opponent had to be someone on the Vikings team, would you lean towards choosing a punter or a kicker or someone of that caliber?
Yeah, I think so. You know, for whatever reason, maybe not Marshall Kane. He's got a pretty big leg. I don't want that to land. But I think out of the other three, I could probably escape with a punter or a kicker.
Arif Hassan, our guest this afternoon here on the Blitz. Find his work, zonecoverage.com, Vikings tab at the top of the page. Make sure to click on it. Xavier Rhodes got the big boy extension over the weekend. What number within the contract stood out to you the most? I never look at the overall number because rarely do they ever see it, if ever. I always like to cater or look towards the guaranteed money. What within Xavier Rhodes' contract did you clamor towards with the numbers?
For me, I always take a look at sort of what the average compares to after you adjust it for cap strength. And you're right that they won't see, you know, the full contract ever. But, you know, you might be in a situation where, you know, Xavier Rhodes is kind of in a similar situation that Everson Griffin might be, or that Everson Griffin was, where the third contract takes over the last 2 years, and Everson Griffin got paid just a little bit more instead of a little bit less over the lifetime of the contract. So in that context, if we were going to evaluate sort of the average of the contract, you know, I take a look at it after adjusting for the cap environment of the time. So, you know, someone who signed a big contract in 2014, it's not going to look big in 2017, but the team clearly, you know, consumed more of their available resources to sign that player. When I did that, I found that Xavier Rhodes actually only accounted for the ninth highest average after accounting for the cap environment that he signed his contract in. The first 3 years, he's the third highest paid cornerback, which is, you know, pretty good, you know, understanding of how much he'll be paid before we get into contract talks again. And that's interesting, but I think that, you know, some new contracts will roll in. He will no longer be the highest paid safety. I think what ends up happening is that the Vikings basically ended up with a very, very solid deal where they devoted less than 10% of their cap space to one of their top players.
Smart move by the Vikings too, right? Like, I haven't seen from the fans, from anyone who covers the Vikings like yourself, I haven't seen any, and I'm sure they exist somewhere, but I haven't seen any hostile takes about the Vikings giving this contract extension to Xavier Rhodes. It seemed like both camps were very happy, and the Vikings now have him locked up for the long haul. Like, recent memory, when the Jets forked over that deal to Darrelle Revis, I know there were a lot of angry Jets fans with that deal. I didn't see that from the purple and gold fans when this extension was announced.
Yeah, no, it seemed pretty universal. You know, everyone seemed to praise the Vikings for the deal, which, you know, I think makes a lot of sense. You know, everyone kind of recognizes Xavier Rhodes is pretty good. I think the Vikings fans tend to overrate Rhodes a little bit. I mean, if he's as good as he was last year all the time, then yeah, okay, fine. He's you know, probably as good as they say. But, you know, you always have to take into account that, you know, some years, you know, players are going to play a little bit above their level, and some years are going to play a little bit below their level. So I think, you know, he's a Pro Bowl quality, you know, cornerback. Naming him as one of the best cornerbacks in the league is maybe not accurate, but it has given Vikings fans kind of the ammunition they need to feel very, very comfortable in the deal. So, yeah, you're right. I don't think that there has been very much criticism of the deal.
If we play the lame tier game, what tier of cornerbacks is Xavier Rhodes currently in for you, and could he project to be one of the best corners sometime soon, maybe in the next couple of years? Like an all-pro caliber cornerback, could he project into that?
Yeah, if we're going to say, you know, tier one is like all-pro, tier two is like first-team Pro Bowl, then I'd probably put him in tier three, you know, banging the ceiling onto tier two. My favorite statistic about him last year is that he led the league in passer rating allowed in coverage, and he did that while he was covering some of the top cornerbacks in the NFL. And what's even more impressive about that is that in garbage time, you know, he had some of the statistics logged against him. DeAndre Hopkins, for example, got 40 yards and a touchdown against him in garbage time, and that adds to the passer rating statistic. He still led the league. You know, with that kind of performance on a consistent basis, he shut down Odell Beckham, I believe, for 23 yards. Kelvin Benjamin got 0 yards, even after Xavier Rhodes got, I think, hurt in that game. I think he's up there. It's just, you know, that these performances against these smaller, quicker guys like Pierre Garçon, you know, that is kind of what's holding him back a little bit from what I would say puts him in, like, the Desmond Trufant level, a guy from the same draft class. I would say that he definitely has the potential. You know, he has to use his length and his explosion a little bit more when dealing with those smaller guys, but he definitely has the potential to move up a tier or possibly two, you know, knowing that, you know, Richard Sherman's kind of been falling off and that, you know, Patrick Peterson's only been at this level for like 1 or 2 years of his career. You know, I think it's possible.
Who on that defense, ideally, we've now seen Everson Griffin and Xavier Rhodes most recently get these contract extensions. Who on that defense, ideally, would you like to see get locked up next for the long haul?
Yeah, I think the rumors right now are actually going to be it's Anthony Barr, Linval Joseph, with contract talks beginning for Eric Kendricks, who cannot sign a contract for the CBA for the next couple of months. But, you know, those seem to be the players that they're focusing on right now, and to me, those players make the most sense to focus on right now. You know, the other players that were like very, very excited about, people like Harrison Smith, who've already signed a contract extension, or people like Steele Hunter, who won't be able to sign a contract extension. You know, those are players that, you know, we can continue thinking about, but we're just not in a window where it would make sense to offer a contract. So I think that the players the Vikings have already identified, in Linval Joseph, Anthony Barr, and Eric Kendricks, are probably the players that I would say meet that criteria.
Vikings talk this afternoon with Arif Hassan here on the Blitz, AM 1450 KATE. All right, you have been at training camp. Let's start with the offense. Who and what has stood out to you from the get-go, the last couple of days? However you want to chop it up, who and what on the offense has stood out to you?
You know, I want to say, Dalvin Cook for sure, and I've wanted to say for a while, like, hey, he looks special, take it with a grain of salt. We haven't had pads on, and, you know, it's just training camp or whatever. But now I've seen a bunch of other people. say the same thing, that it just, he just feels like he's a special running back. I saw, you know, Mark Craig at the Star Tribune say it. I saw Sports Illustrated just published a story where they also used the word special. Special is the word that comes to mind, I think, for so many of the people covering training camp watching Dalvin Cook, that it's impossible not to mention him. And so in the very, very short run, you know, again, training camp, I want to say Dalvin Cook definitely stands out. He looks phenomenal. His footwork looks amazing. And, you know, hard to evaluate running backs, but to the extent that we can, I want to isolate him. Other than that, you know, Stephon Diggs, I think, has continued to improve. You know, and maybe, you know, Xavier Rhodes and Terrence Newman, Trey Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander, they haven't looked, I think, to the level that they'll play in season. They haven't looked as good in camp as I had expected them to. Some of that might be because players like Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen are doing such a good job. I think they've both advanced. But they're standing out to me, too. Alex Boone is probably the only offensive lineman that I'm, like, very, very comfortable with right now. And he's doing a really good job, you know, shutting people down. So those are the three or four people that I would talk about the most.
You mentioned Dalvin Cook, and a lot of people are raving about him early on here in training camp. You mentioned the phrase, take it with a grain of salt, because it is just training camp, but everyone very high on Dalvin Cook already and what they've seen and what they've been impressed with surrounding him. Do you envision Latavius Murray maybe getting a little anxious, or I don't want to say like quivering in his boots? He's a quality caliber NFL running back, but do you think he's getting more anxious now to get back onto the field as soon as possible, seeing that it is Dalvin Cook impressing everyone?
Yeah, I think so, and I think that it's less about seeing Dalvin Cook play well and more about just not being on the field. I think that, you know, the more time that he's not on the field, the more frustrated he feels. He mentioned, you know, that he's feeling a little bit frustrated watching the other running backs run. But I don't think it's so much that, you know, Dalvin Cook's talent level has been so overwhelming that he feels like he needs to get in there. I think it's more that it's just we're getting closer and closer to the season and he's not ready yet. He's someone who's very, very confident in his abilities. So seeing another player perform well, I don't think adds to that anxiety. I think it's really just, you know, it's been so long since he's been able to practice with the team.
I have seen a lot of people, and you may fall into this camp as well, I've seen a lot of people raving about Michael Floyd so far. I thought I saw a report that there were a couple people that said he looks like a wide receiver one, not any slap towards Stephon Diggs, just in a by-himself manner. I saw a couple people say that Michael Floyd has been eye-poppingly good so far. Have you had the same takeaways?
Yeah, he's been fantastic. It's a little bit tough. I think half of his, like, very, very good plays have been against sort of the second-team defense, and so you always kind of want to be like, well, you know, when we adjust it. But I think even after you do that, I think that he's been, you know, maybe the best or the most highlight-worthy receiver in camp is maybe the best way to put it, and I think that he's also, in addition to those highlights, put together some really, really consistent performances as well. So he's been pretty astounding. It's good that you brought his name up. I totally forgot to mention him. And it's getting more and more to the point where it feels like, you know, the Vikings have really lost out on the fact that he's been suspended for the first four games of the season, instead of, oh, the Vikings are going to be, you know, out of some depth, because Michael Floyd, I don't know what he looked like in camp for Arizona, but if he looked like this and performed like he did in Arizona, maybe it's reason to tamp it down. But if he never looked, you know, as consistently good in camp as he does right now, then maybe that's a reason to see a potential turnaround for his career.
Arif Hasan with us this afternoon on The Blitz. His work, zonecoverage.com, Vikings tab at the top of the page. Make sure to click on it. Let's go to the flip side of the ball defensively. Any young guys catching your eye, and what have stood out on that side of the ball?
And I would say that, there haven't been, you know, like enormous free agents or any new guys coming in, but Danielle Hunter, who just got promoted to starting position, has been playing lights out. He and Everson Griffin have been switching sides, and both he and Everson Griffin have just been dominant. And, you know, that could speak to the quality of Rashad Hill, who's currently playing left tackle instead of Riley Reiff, who's injured, or Mike Remmers, who's the right tackle. And that probably plays, you know, a role too, but they've been absolutely dominating, and it's been really, you know, exciting to see, you know, them play well. Besides that, you know, I kind of like a lot of these bottom-of-the-roster guys on defense. Jack Tocho, I think, just just before we finished, had a really excellent day in drills, probably the best bottom of the roster defensive performer in that day. Elijah Lee has been, I think, a pretty astounding linebacker, and I kind of wish, you know, that he'd been promoted up, as we've seen some injuries in the linebacking core. He hasn't been, so maybe the Vikings see something that I don't. But from what I see, you know, Elijah Lee has been playing just really astoundingly well. And then Tashaun Bauer, another defensive end, undrafted free agent from LSU, a guy I wasn't even that high on. I thought that, you know, he wasn't going to be able to provide much for the Vikings. He's been, you know, pretty excellent. And Anton Exum, when he's played as nickel corner, he looks like he's playing his natural position, which makes sense. He played cornerback in college. But he looks a lot more like he knows what he's doing than he does at safety. And that's just kind of exciting to see.
Have any of these pending or potential position battles started to take form or unfold, or is it still too early to kind of tell?
We're not seeing sort of resolution for the center position just yet. I think that at the moment, Pat Elflein has had a lot more control of the snaps, and if you give him an advantage when it comes to actually snapping the ball, he's been a better performer as a blocker. And so I think that he's going to get more run as time goes on. Between Lemur and Edmund Robinson at weak side linebacker, I don't think that we've seen any resolution yet. They've been switching off. It seems like Lemur is getting more first-team reps. So, you know, that's something to sort of keep watch for. And I think the other biggest position battle is at the three-technique position. And it seems like Dayton Jones is getting more run, but Tom Johnson is, like, the preferred favorite for the Vikings. I would love it if Dayton Jones won the position because I know how good Tom Johnson is, but I also know that Dayton Jones is a more well-rounded three technique who has the ability to play against the run in a way that, you know, Tom Johnson sometimes doesn't. So that's kind of how things are going. I don't think we've seen any resolution on any of those position battles, but I think that, you know, we're seeing kind of differences in play. As for, you know, Mackenzie Alexander versus Terrence Newman, it's come to the point where I don't think Terrence Newman is actually competing for any starting spot. He's just providing depth at basically all three cornerback spots, and it's Mackenzie Alexander's job to lose at the nickel spot.
We have not talked since Teddy Bridgewater spoke to the media last week, so I'm curious, were your takeaways based off Teddy's verbiage, were they more pessimistic or optimistic when his 15 minutes were up last week?
Well, they were. I think that based off of, like, the stuff I was tweeting out and the way people were reacting, I guess the specific content of the words, you know, that he was using could inspire pessimism. A lot of people seemed kind of worried with what he said. But based off of, you know, being there and listening to him talk, I felt actually a lot more optimistic. I felt like, you know, he was just kind of laying down sort of what the challenges were and that they didn't bother him that much and that, you know, he's been progressing. It's always, you know, difficult to tell, and you always have to read into language and tone more than maybe you're comfortable with. But I think that, you know, Teddy has been not just extremely focused, which is something that I think we could have already gathered, but been pretty comfortable with kind of the way things are. To him, it very much seems like genuinely that something like this, the injury, has been just part of a kind of a larger plan for his life, and that he's kind of learned the lessons he's needed to learn from this, and he's drawn upon sort of, you know, the players that have talked to him, people like Willis McGahee and Frank Gore, who have had some pretty catastrophic injuries in their career, you know, his mother who survived a battle with breast cancer, and so on. He's drawn upon kind of those lessons to kind of move forward. So I'm a little bit more optimistic based off of what I heard, but I can understand why someone who's, like, reading the transcript would maybe not be as optimistic because, you know, he's pretty frank about sort of the biggest challenges. For example, he had no idea if he was going to lose his leg, and that's, like, a very scary reality to deal with.
You just brought up a lot of the quotes that he provided, either directly or paraphrasing. You just brought up a lot of them in his presser last week. Was there one statement, one quote that Teddy had that really resonated with you, that stood out maybe more than the rest?
Well, I think the thing that is probably, I think there's a quote that sticks with me and a quote that I think is the takeaway from the press. And the one that sticks with me is that question, did you think you were going to lose your leg? And he goes, oh, I had no idea. Like, it's just that, I don't know. And that kind of just stuck with me that, like, that it was that real. But I think the takeaway is, and he's used this line before, but it's just so inspiring I come from amazing DNA. And he's talked about, you know, how his mother is just this fighter, and that he is also, you know, that kind of person. He's trying to be, you know, the kind of fighter that his mother is. So the line, you know, I come from amazing DNA is just, I think it's just so profound.
Let's finish up. We'll bounce around like we always do with some league-wide notes. Blake Bortles, 5 interceptions, wearing the red jersey at practice when he cannot be touched. Is that a big deal, no deal, or somewhat of a deal? And what's going on in Jacksonville? Because I saw, was it Brandon Albert, who just like retired on the spot, their left tackle? I actually saw someone tweet out, I don't know if it's true, but someone tweeted out that Dante Fowler that he called out? Didn't call him out directly, but said like, put him up against me. I want to go 1v1, and then he got basically taken two and then retired shortly after that. So there's a lot going on in Jacksonville. But Blake Bortles, 5 interceptions in 1 practice. Is that a big deal, somewhat of a deal, or not a big deal?
I mean, I think that Jacksonville Jaguars fans are kind of resigned to the fact that with Blake Bortles as the quarterback, they're not going to be winning many games. And so from the perspective of adjusting our expectations, no, it's not that big a deal. But, you know, if you were maybe optimistic about the season, you know, it sounds and looks like more of the same and something that you should worry about. To his credit, the very next practice, you know, he didn't throw any interceptions, but, you know, that's kind of not how it works. 5 interceptions are 5 interceptions. And so, yeah, I guess it's a big deal in that it's more of the same, and more of the same is pretty significantly bad. As for what's going on in Jacksonville, it probably nothing new, honestly. I'm pretty sure it's true. So that Brandon Albert had a one-on-one against Dante Fowler, lost, and then challenged him again, asked for another one-on-one, and lost that one too. I'm sure, you know, whatever happened there may have played a role in his decision. Maybe he also saw Blake Bortles throw 5 interceptions and decided, yeah, well, it's not worth it. So, you know, it might be all of those things at once.
This one I've been, and we'll probably finish up on this, I've been really waiting to ask you about it. Jamal Adams, rookie safety for the New York Jets, said yesterday while sitting next to Roger Goodell, and I think that is somewhat noteworthy. Roger Goodell was to Jamal Adams' immediate left. He said that the football field for him is the perfect place to die. He'd be willing to die on the football field. And when I thought about it, faith, family, when I think about sacrifice, my own life, those two things pop up to mind. But of course, we never know what we would really sacrifice because we're not in those spots. I would never say my job is something that I would sacrifice. I can't think of any scenario where I would choose my job as something to sacrifice my own life over. Would you make of the statement from Jamal Adams? And then as a follow-up, I'll double down. The immediate follow-up question to that, and it was eerie to me that there were fans there and they gave him like a roaring round of applause after he said he'd be willing to die on the football field. The follow-up question, someone said, so if it meant like your life being taken from you at the age of 50 as a result of playing football, you're okay with that. Roger Goodell stepped in and suggested basically that a life in the NFL as a player has a longer life expectancy than the average human being, which to me just seems kind of foolish, but I'm sure he has some statistical measure that would back it up, right?
Yeah, well, I think he's not. That's so ridiculous.
I know I just threw a lot your way, too. I didn't want to leave any of it out, man. There was a lot going on.
I get it.
It was crazy.
Well, okay, so let me see if I can take on as many of these as possible. So I think my reaction to the Jamal Adams thing is I think that's like very morbid and the wrong attitude to take towards anything, because I think that anytime you like, and this is like a personal philosophy thing, right? Many times you orient your life towards like one singular thing, I think that's probably more damaging than it is a good thing. So like die on the plane of the football field because you love football so much, I just feel like it's so narrow in terms of the experiences that you'll have and the things that you'll love. But you know, that's like a personal philosophical thing. I really like Martellus Bennett's reaction. Look, football is great, but I ain't dying for this. Like, I think that's, yeah. And he also tweeted that, I hope all these young cats that are willing to die for the game of football find a higher purpose in life. Like, that's, I think, maybe probably the best way to put it. It's morbid, and I'm like worried that this is like an attitude that, you know, maybe only one, but maybe some players, you know, have about the game. It certainly probably makes for better football, and I'm not going to deny that, but I think that that's probably not worth it. As for Roger Goodell's comments that, like, the average NFL player has a longer lifespan than the average human, I think that it kind of doesn't take into account, like, the various contexts in which, like, the average human lives in. I mean, you've got, you know, a billion people living in India, you've got a billion people living in China, and their healthcare systems, as well as, you know, the pollution problems that they have, you know, they all play a role, right? If we're talking about the average human, you know, of course, you know, some people in other parts of the world are not going to have the same opportunities, the same sort of, like, systems that they can work with that will expand their lifespan. So it's, like, not a good comparator. Maybe a better comparator would be, you know, black men in that income level. And I think that people have done that comparison of the NFL players with a significantly shorter lifespan. That's I think, intentionally misleading.
You covered all the bases there. I was thoroughly impressed. Folks, you can find his work, by the way, Arif Hasan's work, at zonecoverage.com. Click on the Vikings tab at the top of the page. Arif, as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you for the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We will put a bow on the show next right here on The Blitz.